The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hi, this is Jeff Chrysler.
And this is Tony Hendra.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour. Tony, it's good to talk to you again, and it has been an incredible week, hasn't it?
It's been a very dumb week. Why don't we give you the news in brief? Sunday, Ted Cruz forces kids to watch him declare fourth-party candidacy, goes on Obamacare because his wife works at Goldman Sachs, says he's Galileo because he ignores scientific reason.
On Monday, Phil Robertson looks through Pat Robertson's trash for a speech, finds just the first 10 pages of the script for Law Abiding Citizen with Jamie Foxx and Gerard Butler, and he just reads it aloud at a conference.
Tuesday, George Zimmerman says he's Anne Frank, persecuted by President Obama and a victim of Skittles PR.
On Wednesday, some Deadline TV critic complains about all the good TV, and even non-working white males like myself suggest casting her in a Phil Robertson speech.
Thursday, Indiana reclaims glorious past, creates a statewide version of Hickory circa 1951, complete with disdain for outsiders, alcoholic fathers, lack of modern industry, and probably Gene Hackman.
And then on Friday, George Zimmerman says he's Gene Hackman. Ted Cruz says he's Barbara Hershey. Phil Robertson talks about them both getting violated and then is arrested under the new Indiana law, loses A&E's provided health care insurance, so goes on Obamacare, but is refused treatment by Indiana doctors because they religiously object to what they imagine happens to him in prison. And then he goes on to die in an all-white version of Neighborhoody Watch.
And speaking of dying, Saturday, Robert Durst says he cannot stand trial because he killed himself 23 years ago in Los Angeles.
It was quite an action-packed week, and I'm sure we'll touch on some of that and more on this week's episode of
The Final Edition Radio Hour.
The Final Edition Advice Panel answers this week's plea for advice. Dear the Final Edition Advice Panel, any tax advice from the Final Edition Advice Panel?
I advise you to find a Jew.
Advice!
People have been telling me for years to write off my comedy career.
Count all those kidnapped children in your basement as dependents.
Sometimes it's cheaper to kill your wife than divorce her.
Advice!
No, you can't deduct parking tickets.
Move to Delaware. Not for the tax reasons, but just because I'm gonna kill
you. You know, people often ask me, what is a W for? Well, you gotta have a letter between V and X.
So I went to the tax lady and she said, I assume you want the short form?
Well, I remember years ago I wanted to file Chapter 11. Then I thought I'd wait for the movie.
Advice!
Well, as a qualified tax expert, I just want you to know that I have my dick out.
And the whole multitude of them arose, and led him unto Pilate.
Crucify him! Crucify him!
Jesus, this crowd claims that you're the king of the Jews. Is that true?
You have said so.
I'll ask it again. Are you the king of the Jews?
You have said it.
I have not said it. I have asked it. So I'll ask a final time. Jesus, are you the king of the Jews?
It is as you said.
Damn it! You're not answering the question!
Crucify him! Crucify him!
No. We need a confession first. Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? Yes or no?
You say yes.
No, you say yes.
Yes to what?
Yes to the question.
The question being?
Are you the king of the Jews?
That's what you say.
No, but what do you say?
I don't say much.
You don't say much?
I mostly tend to my flock.
Your flock of Jews?
My flock of sheep.
Ah!
Crucify him! Crucify him!
I'm trying! Jesus, the king of the Jews. Is that a guy who you are?
I could be. Hard to tell.
Now answer me!
Check back in a bit.
What?
Reply hazy. Try again later.
Wait a minute. What's going on?
Pontius Pilate, sir? That isn't Jesus. You've been interrogating a magic eight ball.
Oh, not again. Right, that's it. Magic eight ball? Will I ever find true love?
Outlook, not so good.
When you need to get out of town and go somewhere exotic, look no further than Sandal. Sandal's Resort at San Quentin. Located along the coast of Northern California, this federal penitentiary is just the escape you need. Spend your day soaking up that NorCal sunshine while you enjoy the prison's luxurious facilities. Check out the basketball courts, indoor toilets, and relax with a complimentary anal cavity search. Plus, only we can guarantee certain star sightings.
Honey, is that convicted murderer Scott Peterson?
Okay, don't look now, but I think he's coming towards us.
Maybe he'll let us tweet a photo with him. Hashtag, killed your pregnant wife.
Hashtag, tell me how you did it.
Sandals Resort, San Quentin. Because nothing says a second honeymoon like midday rape.
Oh my God, this soup is so good.
Oh, you got the clam chowder. It's good, huh?
More than good. It's amazing. Oh God, dude, you have to taste this. It tastes like angel cum.
Okay. No thanks.
What, you don't like chowder?
I love chowder. I don't like eating cum, okay?
Dude, that's homophobic.
I have no problem with gay people, but I just prefer not to eat semen, if you don't mind. That doesn't make me homophobic.
It's not a gay thing anyway. It's angel cum. Like, you wouldn't want to taste the semen of a heavenly being?
No, I don't want to taste anyone's semen. I don't care where they are in celestial hierarchy.
Okay, you're telling me that if an angel appeared to us right now, you would refuse to consume his guy batter?
No way I eat anybody's jizz. Sorry, dude.
I'm calling you on it. O heavenly father, from whom all blessings come, we thank thee for thy bounty. Please, Father, please send us an angel so that my friend can taste the semen of one of the heavenly host. This I pray in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen. Did you hear that? Heavenly harps! Behold, who is it that appears before us?
Actually, that harp sound is on my phone. It helps announce me to mortal men. You prayed for an angel? The Lord heard your entreaties.
You're an angel? You look like that guy in Superbad before he lost weight.
Yeah, Jonah Hill, I get that all the time.
In heaven?
Duh, that's where I live. What do you guys want, anyway?
My friend wants to taste your semen.
No, I don't.
Look, pal, it's not a gay thing. I'm a benevolent spirit who acts as like an intermediary between heaven and earth.
Wait, it's just, can you look like somebody else? Like, I don't know, Orlando Bloom or somebody?
Seriously, guy? That would be gay. Besides, you got a problem with the way I look?
Well, all right, how about Jonah Hill? But thinner, like in Wolf of Wall Street.
Nope. Sorry, fella. This is what angels look like. Take it or leave it.
He'll take it. Hey, can you beat off or something so that he can get some of your jizz?
Come on, guys. I gotta be in a certain mood.
Yeah. Here's a magazine. Use that.
Okay. Wait, this is a Crate and Barrel catalog.
What? Jesus. Sorry, I don't generally carry pornography around.
Why are you carrying a Crate and Barrel catalog?
Forget the whole thing. I'm supposed to come to pictures of napkins and flatware? No way, dude. You're supposed to have some kind of porn magazine. In God's plan, I mean.
Come on! Here, I'll suck you off. Then I'll transfer the semen from my mouth to my friend's mouth here in a creamy load of man sauce, okay? Good. Here goes.
So all angels look like Fat Jonah Hill?
Please, not now. This guy is good. Shit, my phone.
Yes, I got it. Here we go. Open up.
I'm still unsure about this.
Take it.
There. How does that taste?
Oh, God. It's just slimy and salty like fucking jizz. Jesus fucking Christ.
Hey, language, please.
Best prank ever. Dude, this guy is not a real angel. I hired him and set up the whole thing, and you just took a mouthful of his cum. I really got you this time. Psych.
All right, you got me all right. I gotta hand it to you. Though, it does strike me odd that you not only had to take a mouthful of semen yourself, but you had to suck off a guy who looks like Fat Jonah Hill in the process.
Dude, whatever. The prank has fallen apart, and I rescued it. It was worth it.
Actually, the prank was working perfectly. The prank we pulled on you! You see, I saw your Craigslist ad for a Fat Jonah Hill impersonator willing to ejaculate in the course of a performance!
So your friend contacted me as well, and we set up this whole ruse. We replaced the titty mag you brought with the Crate and Barrel catalog, giving me an excuse to refuse to masturbate.
Knowing that you would probably jump in and start blowing him in order to save your prank. Happy April Fool's Day, dude!
Aw, man! You really got me. But why did you go through with taking the semen from my mouth to yours? At that point, you had me.
I guess I got caught up, and honestly, it didn't taste all that bad. For a fat guy semen, it was actually quite full of flavor.
And so is this clam chowder. Say, it really does taste like angel cum.
Yes, it's Campbell Soup's creamy New England clam chowder. So good, you'll look forward to a second coming.
Celebrity voice impersonated. Jonah Hill does not endorse Campbell's Soup products or ejaculate in other men's mouths.
Have you had your soup today? Campbell tastes good. Good. Have Campbell's every day. You get vitamins that way. Proteins and minerals.
Republican Senator Ted Cruz announces his candidacy for president. The final edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
Well, if Ted Cruz becomes president, everybody's going to want to shut down the government.
Well, we've never had bad luck with a president from Texas.
I think Ted Cruz embodies everything that's great about America. Canada, Cuba.
He went to Harvard, which proves he must have known a guy.
They say he's a great speaker. You know what? The only great speaker I've known was made by Altec Lansing.
I knew him when he worked under his original name, Dick Move.
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Coming up next on News for Women.
Is your lipstick making you fat?
The facts you need to know.
Angelina Jolie, she said having her ovaries removed was a cancer thing. But is it really a fat thing?
How much do ovaries weigh anyway?
All that and more right here on News for Women.
Kate Middleton, pregnant fat or just fat fat?
A full report coming up from our British correspondent.
Unofficial sources close to the palace say that she's not adopting a secret baby to cover up a devastating addiction to donuts dipped in melted cheese. But how can we know for sure?
Special guest mystic, Tony, psychic to the stars, is here.
Crystal ball, reveal your secrets! Oh my God, if Kim Kardashian does not look out immediately, if not sooner, she might well have some fat in her future!
And we have our daily bikini fashion roundup.
What you will see will shock you.
Is that fat?
Ugh!
Gross!
Disgusting.
Human
oh
beings should just be thin.
Oh, always.
So, let's get right to it with our first story here on News for Women.
Nuclear proliferation in Iran.
Welcome to the show, Mr. Alex Simon from the UN Press Office. Farah Hussein, professor of Iranian history at Stanford University and a representative from the International Association for Nuclear Power Station Safety, Mr. Derek Chong.
Thank you all for being here with us today on News for Women to debate this important subject.
Bottom line, could Iranian nuclear proliferation be making us fat?
All the skinny on the skinny, only here on News for Women.
Glenn?
Yes, Mr. President.
Send in Dennis.
Yes, Mr. President.
Mr. President?
Hey, Dennis, have a seat.
What's the matter?
Did you see this story about George Zimmerman?
You mean that video where Zimmerman accuses you of inflaming racial tensions after he was acquitted of killing Trayvon Martin? Yes, I did, Mr. President.
I know I'm supposed to ignore stuff like this, but that guy really pisses me off. He called me Barack Hussein Obama. Hussein, get it? As if I were a Muslim.
Mr. President, you are a Muslim. But that's beside the point. George Zimmerman is a miserable little weasel.
He said I was pitting Americans against each other because of their race.
Mr. President, ever since you took office, the Republicans have been saying you divide Americans and inflame racial tensions. Why do you let it get to you?
I'll tell you why. Because if enough of these right-wing sons of bitches keep saying it, people will eventually realize it's the truth.
Mr. President, not this again.
I am dividing Americans by race. That's my thing.
That's what I do.
Of course, Mr. President, but come on.
Why did I run for president, Dennis?
To create a collectivist welfare paradise favoring blacks and Mexicans run by Jews, Mr. President.
You damn right, bitch. That's job one. But till it happens, ain't nobody gotta know that shit.
Mr. President, I know how frustrating it is that the GOP-controlled Congress won't let you take billions of dollars from the Pentagon to pay reparations to the descendants of slaves.
No, they will not. Meanwhile, all that money's just being wasted dropping bombs on ISIL, who I'm secretly hoping will win.
Mr. President, let's change the subject. In about 10 minutes, you have to meet with those community college students.
You're right. Shit, I gotta calm down so I can keep fooling the media. Oh.
What is it, sir?
Did you read that quote yesterday from Ben Carson? He called me a psychopath.
With all due respect, Mr. President, you are a psychopath.
I know. But how'd that motherfucker figure it out?
Hey there, Americans. I'm Republican dipshit Ted Cruz.
And I'm Democratic arrogant heir apparent Hillary Clinton. And right now,
We're the two-party system. Did you ever think it would get to this point?
Where the first Republican to declare would be a total idiot moron, and the first Democrat to declare would be a center-right fake liberal who won't even declare her candidacy?
Hey, I'm not just a total idiot moron, I'm a total idiot Hispanic moron.
You're lucky, because otherwise you wouldn't appeal to any of what our party stands for.
Your party doesn't stand for anything, Miss Hillary. It's a cult of personality.
It worked for Bill, it worked for Obama, and it'll work for me. Parties are a thing of the past.
That's where we tea partiers live, Miss Hillary. In the past. We're trying to get back to a mythical white person era that never existed. We're on the wrong side of every issue, from abortion to war, but last time I checked, we control Congress. You know why?
That's the two-party system.
See, I know I ain't winning this here presidency. For one thing, I won't win the big liberal states because I'm too fucking stupid.
Do you really think you can undo Obamacare?
Are you shitting me?
So why are you running?
I'm establishing my brand. You know Flo from Progressive Insurance?
Yeah.
I'm like her, just with really bad ideas instead of good rates on your insurance.
Why are you admitting all this?
Because it doesn't matter. You don't have a party to oppose mine, and we don't have a presidential candidate to oppose you. You know what that's called?
The two-party system.
Hi, I'm Bernie Sanders. Can I get in on this?
I like a lot of what this guy says.
Me too, but he doesn't matter because he's
outside the two-party system.
Hey, Hillary, any chance you might declare your candidacy before the election?
Oh, that's so funny. I'm crying.
Are you a male horse?
No.
Are you unlucky in love?
No.
Well, now science has the answer. Winnie Lower.
No.
That's right. Winnie Lower.
No.
Even lower.
No.
Ooh, daddy.
No.
Science called it. Ladies love it when you sound like Barry White.
No.
Ooh, naughty horse. You're making me so hot right now.
Seriously, scientists took time and money out of researching cancer to discover this.
Nice and low. Just like that.
No.
Give it to me, baby. Ooh, yes.
Honestly, you'd think something like Ebola would be more of a priority. But really, what the hell?
No.
Ooh, yes.
No.
All right.
No.
Ooh.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh.
No.
Woo.
No. No.
Oh, God. Oh.
David Koch has been in the news this week as the target of an energetic new movement to remove him from the boards of science-directed institutions, like the American Natural History Museum and the Smithsonian, because of his distinctly unscientific opposition to climate change. Here's the speech he gave on the occasion of his election to the board of MIT a couple of years ago, in which he laid out his role in American governance and also why he will never be removed from any board anywhere.
Good evening. I'm David Koch.
Some political commentators in the U.S. noting the wave of rebellions against the status quo sweeping across the world from the Middle East to Russia to the United Kingdom and elsewhere have wondered about the possibility of similar upheavals in the U.S., which could challenge the control of the country by us, its corporate oligarchy. Happily, this will never happen. Here in the U.S., the unemployed poor, working poor, and soon-to-be poor, a.k.a. the middle class, who constitute some 85% of its population, have been successfully convinced by our, let's call them messengers in the media, on television, on radio, and increasingly in the internet, that they too can become millionaires and multimillionaires on the same order as we oligarchs. Therefore, because they hope to avail themselves of it in the future, they support the openly corrupt system by which the oligarchy continues to enrich itself. Enriching it still further, the lower classes support policies to reduce or eliminate the, let's be frank, laughably minimal taxes paid by our members. They even support some moves by our hand-picked political representatives to eliminate government programs that might relieve them of their poverty, misery, and chronic stress by ensuring them the basic human rights to jobs, homes, education, and health care. Instead, they accept as their lot in life all-consuming worry about jobs, homes, education, and health care, leaving them no time or energy to investigate or fight for alternative ways of living. We call this system freedom. Amazingly, through incessant sentimental appeals to bogus patriotism, which we neither feel nor believe in, we have even convinced the poor that freedom is worth dying for. In short, the poor and middle class, rather than rebelling against the oligarchy, which, let's continue being frank and open here, is responsible for impoverishing them, cling to the cretinous fantasy that people who regard as their inalienable right amassing as much of the nation's wealth as they possibly can will somehow allow them to acquire wealth commensurate with their own. We call this massive delusion the American dream. Freedom and the American dream ensure that the ever poorer working and middle classes will never feel anger against us, but instead blame one another for their increasing misery and poverty. They are encouraged in this collective error by our aforementioned hand-picked political representatives and messengers in the media, dissipating into futile infighting and finger-pointing the righteous rage which is a prerequisite of true revolution. Revolution which could transform their lives, strip us of our admittedly ludicrous wealth, perhaps even imprison or execute some of us, is thus not only impossible in our system, but as the popular saying goes, who needs it? We've already had our revolution more than 200 years ago, and it didn't work. Thank you, the final edition, for this opportunity to reassure you that here in America, all is well.
David Koch is a corporate executive and effective owner of the David Koch Theater at Lincoln Center, formerly the property of the citizens of New York State.
With luck, we'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Welcome back to the Final Edition. I'm Andrew Hammond, standing in for Tony Hendra, who's suffering from ADD. That's audio deficit disorder. Our glorious founder, that's Tony, appeared on the Academy Awards this year for about 4 seconds with Christopher Guest in a clip from the movie he guest co-starred in, This is Spinal Tap. He finally made it to the Oscars, and it was for a movie. So he thinks that counts. To mark the moment, here's a conversation Jeff Kreisler and Tony had last year on the 30th anniversary of the release of his almost Oscar-winning film.
As most of our listeners probably know, this is the 30th anniversary of the release of the seminal film of our generation, or at least one very good movie, and that is This is Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap was a satire of the music industry, or perhaps it was more than that. We'll find out when we talk to Tony Hendra, who our listeners know as both the co-producer and co-star of the Final Edition Radio Hour, and as the man who played Sir Ian Faith, the band manager in Spinal Tap.
I don't think Ian has been knighted.
as just regular Ian Faith, a man who should have been knighted. Spinal Tap, to me, it was Spinal Tap, Monty Python, Holy Grail, and Animal House. Those are my three movies.
The Trinity.
Growing of comedy age, I guess it was. Although Animal House always stuck in my mind more because there was a brief boob scene. But nonetheless, those are my comedy movies.
I would say that Animal House, it does fit in that in the Trinity,
sure.
Because it is actually it got a sort of bad rap in a way because it became seen as a gross out movie with toga parties thrown in.
Right. People think of it as the frat movie, much like they think of Calvin and Hobbes as Calvin pissing on things when it's deeper.
Exactly. Sure. Yes, its reputation was determined by its imitators,
mm-hmm.
And actually, it was a very potent satire of further education in the United States. I mean, with Dean Wormer, who's essentially Nixon,
mm-hmm.
who screws around with the Constitution of Faber College and the ROTC, which is essentially the military and so forth and so on. So but all of that was kind of lost under the welter of food fights and toga parties.
But no, it obviously resonated for more than just a brief boob shot with me. As did Spinal Tap. I don't think there were any boob shots, but there was talk of greased up women on all fours, but
indeed.
Never any shots. Spinal Tap is in a short list of movies, I won't bother pretending to remember them, that has, I think, lasted sort of the test of its time. It's been 30 years, and I think it still resonates even with people that didn't experience sort of what it was perhaps on one level speaking to, which is sort of coming out of the 60s and into the 70s and into this the 80s looming sort of corporate era of music and everything and making fun of those types of bands, and yet people still relate to them even if they never knew any of those elements. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's actually for several reasons, but one of the reasons I'd like to discuss tonight a bit is one that isn't, I don't think, talked about very much, which is that Spinal Tap is on the sort of primary level a scathingly funny parody of the fecklessness and mindlessness of heavy metal. But on a deeper level, it seems to me, it is a satire. I mean, because it's a satire, actually, of an entire system, of the lifestyle, of its assumptions, its personnel, that helped to make the likes of Spinal Tap the cultural nadir it was. Or as one NYU cultural studies course taught by a very, very serious cultural studies professor called Andrew Ross once put it, Spinal Tap and the decline of Western civilization.
Is that a cause and effect?
Well, yes, apparently, according to Andrew Ross, who is a Scot, by the way, and a very left-wing Scot.
Was that, maybe you're going to tell me, is that because Spinal Tap finally said the emperor has no clothes, and
so everything fell apart?
I
think Spinal Tap was the meme, maybe, or the trope, or the tropey meme, or the meme trope.
The Treme.
Yeah, the Treme.
The Treme, I think that was that movie.
So, anyway, so we have the parodies, obviously wonderfully carried off by the group itself, these lampoons of heavy metal's musical subgenres with all their kind of idiotic priapism, right. that's short for.
And for those few people who maybe somehow don't know the movie, also the big names, the additional big names, sorry, Tony, in there were Christopher Guest.
Michael McKean.
I love that Fran Drescher had a tiny bit role in it.
Yeah, the nanny, yeah.
And
Harry Shearer.
Thank you. God, yeah. That's terrible. Man.
Who is, of course, the giant of The Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah.
Voiceovers. Well, actually, Rob Reiner, too, obviously, is possibly the most famous of all. And
absolutely.
It was his very first movie. But and obviously the lampoons, the parodies are brilliant. And
yeah.
they're brilliant not only because of their ridiculous sexual memes, but because of their pretension. I think it's one of the things that Spinal Tap caught wonderfully was the pretension of heavy metal. Christopher Guest's character, Nigel Tufnell, who is basically the most moronic of the three morons who front Tap, is also its most moronically pretentious with his wonderful work in progress, his trilogy in D minor,
yes.
which has the working title of Lick My Love Pump.
His pretension is what led into the great, like, this one goes to 11 scene. It shattered his, he was professing such grand ambitions.
And of course, actually, Stonehenge is immensely pretentious too,
mm-hmm.
And it's kind of gone down in film history as an epic stage fail, but really its lyrics and effects are just as funny because they perfectly embody that kind of awful, flaccid Lord of the Rings-driven Celtic, Nordic, Aryan race memory fantasies, you know, that heavy metal loves to wallow in. There's that great line, he says, "The druids, nobody knows who they were or what they were doing." It's just perfect. Just hilarious.
Well, it fits in also to that thing that they have earlier about having all the appealing to all the male teenagers as their audience.
Right.
I forget if that was in the scene when he had the
ocean of retarded sexuality. But the thing is that surrounding these wonderful parodies is this kind of 360-degree satire of the industry which brought us rock and fed off it, both while it was alive and well and when it was a fly-blown corpse. And basically, no rock, if you'll forgive the expression, is left unturned during Tap's pathetic journey. And all the slimy things under each one of them are given ample room to slime themselves into movie legend. You mentioned Fran Drescher, whose character name is Barbie Fleckman. Mm-hmm. And she has that wonderful sort of New York, whiny New York voice.
Perfect little publicist-ish type. I forget that was exactly her role. But.
I mean, she's certainly a part of the slime monument that is Polymer Records. And then there's Sir Dennis Eaton Hogg, of course, who is founder of Hogwood, which is a summer camp for pale young boys. And even Howard Hessman. I don't know if Howard Hessman played the Terry Ladd.
He was the manager of the other band, right, that they came across? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, in Memphis. And the star was Duke Fame. Mm. And Duke Fame had been one of the many, many members of Spinal Tap. And what was great about that scene was that Duke Fame is equally talentless. I mean, he's just as much a sort of bottom feeder as Tap is, but he happens to be on the upswing. So Howard Hessman won't let Spinal Tap touch him. And then he sort of gets out of an awkward situation.
How are you, laddie? Great to see you, Terry. Terrific to see you.
Liam.
Ian.
Yeah. But I think my favorite is Paul Schaefer's Artie Fufkin, mm-hmm. the A&R guy in Milwaukee or wherever it is. But he shows up at the record store and eventually, having tried to blame the owner of the record store for the fact that none of the public has shown up, actually blames himself in this marvelous burst of passive aggression and says,
"I'm not asking, I'm telling with this. Kick my ass."
How much of this was improvised and how much of it was scripted?
As far as I know, practically everything, every line in the movie is ad-libbed. I mean, obviously there were stage things like going to 11 because they had to build the set. But what Harry, Rob, Christopher and Michael had done was to write what used to be called a scenario. A scenario is literally a scene-by-scene breakdown. So that they conceptually, all the things that were in the movie were somewhere in that scenario, but once you were in a scene, it was the job of whoever was in the scene to get from point A to point B, and so that's where all these wonderful lines came from. One of the reasons why there's never been a sequel or, in fact, an effective imitation of it is that it was very much of a certain moment, and I think everybody in the movie was sort of in some either superficial or profound way, disappointed with rock and roll. And it was that moment where you still sort of could remember caring about it enough that you were actually disappointed. It's that totality of the picture, I think, that makes the movie so interesting. Everybody in the movie contributes to that sort of world. And in that way, I think it's a satire. I mean, I would say it's a satire comparable, at least in its scope and its success, to Dr. Strangelove, which has the same kind of... It totally creates a world where logic is absent, completely absent.
So we're talking about slime balls. And I got to say, having now worked in entertainment some, if that's what I've been doing for the last million years, is your character resonates even more because you, as the band manager, have a unique sliminess that is sort of, you sort of have to tell lies to everybody in order to keep moving forward until, like, you can no longer lie anymore. When you sort of conceptualize your character, was liar part of the big one of the big words that drove it, or
well, what? No, I didn't. I mean, I didn't really think about it very much until. Well, that's not quite true. I mean, I figured or modeled what I was going to do with this character on a guy called Andrew Lou Goldham. Yes. I think he was the manager of the Rolling Stones, and he was very much. I mean, he was sort of blonde. two-faced kind of fellow, and with a much more pucker, upper-class kind of accent than his squat in the East End of London charges.
Right.
So that seemed to be a fairly good model. But I must say, as soon as I started improvising, I remember it exactly. It was the scene at the beginning of the movie when they're in the limousine, and Ian is lying from the first moment he opens his mouth. He says the New York Times is going to do something, and then he says, "Well, we're not doing anything very much in New York because it's not worth it." But Philadelphia is a big rock town. It's just right from the start. He's making excuses for things before they happen.
One of the things I always thought was interesting about Ian's character is that he, like you said, he'll say, "Oh, the New York Times is going to do something," and then he undercuts it. It struck me that he was the type that would always say something good, even if a second later it contradicted it. And in part, that was not just him lying, but him dealing with other characters, his charges, as you say, who are probably of the type of sociopath that only will hear the good things, that he kind of relied on being able to say, "I'm going to give you $1 million. No, I'm not." And all they heard was, "I'm going to give you $1 million," because want to believe the best about themselves.
Right, exactly. But one of my favorite scenes, actually, is the scene where Nigel is worried about the food, the backstage food.
Oh, yeah. And
Ian is very... he's very attentive, you know. It's not, he's not lying. He's actually trying to help poor moronic Nigel fold the meat around the bread in such a way that it might be edible. But then, you know, when Nigel starts getting worked up, he says, "I don't want you to ruin your performance," you know. And he means it. He means it. Nigel's all he has, you know, and he's all Nigel has. But you're right. You're right. Ian is a slime ball, and I did it brilliantly.
What do you think about Ian's role, or other people's role in the movie, as far as like sort of the corporatism of either looming corporatism of music or just in general? Because in a way, Ian, even though he's son of a slime ball, he is management. I mean, he's their manager, so he himself sort of has a corporate element.
That's what I'm saying, I think, is one of the reasons it has a kind of universal appeal and a continuing appeal, because as you say, those slime balls are still with us and they're still screwing us and they still run the show. And the fact is that the record company hovers sort of invisibly over the whole movie. It's not just in the occasional characters that show up from the record industry. I mean, and often Ian's job is simply to be the messenger of that. I mean, when he produces the Black Album, which doesn't even have their name on it, you know, and tries to enthuse about it, we're finally on our way, you know.
There is sort of this element of the corporation or the record company as God. Like, it's sort of Ian is struggling there and having to lie. But there's a sense that if the company really wanted to get behind it, they can make a star. I mean,
they could make it into Duke fame overnight if they wanted to.
Right, yeah. And yet that doesn't happen. And
I go back to this, the idea that you've just expressed, because it came out like in the height of the Reagan years, right? I mean, it came out in 1984 when sort of unchained capitalism and greed is good, was really roaring, and the corporations had sort of almost overnight, from being the villains of the piece in the 60s and 70s, were now the heroes. But I think this might be one of the reasons, if I'm right, this might be one of the reasons why, and I can reveal this now on our show.
Reveal it.
That the principles of this incredibly successful movie, I mean, one thing you can say about it is that it's not only been pretty successful all over the English-speaking world, and indeed in parts of the non-English-speaking world, like Germany and France, all the money that presumably has been taken in by somebody, in fact by a number of corporations, more than half a dozen actually, over the 30 years, not one cent of that has been enjoyed by the principals of the movie. No profit participation, although all of us had contracts guaranteeing profit participation. Not one cent of that has been seen. So they got their revenge, the corporation.
That's kind of amazing. And you did have contracts that said you get back. I mean, I know, look, Hollywood reporting, quote unquote, is making sure that every expense just goes in lockstep with every piece of income. But that's kind of ridiculous.
The budget for this movie?
It was, what, like $12? I mean,
$4 million, okay? Right. $4 million. It's probably one of the lowest budget massive hit movies ever. And if There comes a point where if a movie costs $4 million and it continues to make money for 30 years, there's going to be some profit there somewhere. But it wasn't just, actually, not just profit participation in the 90s. And I would get, at this point, I think Fox, 20th Century, owned the movie. And I would get residual checks, which had been redacted. I mean, you could see that there were four and five figure sums that had just been blacked out.
But they sent the check anyway.
It wasn't canceled. It was just redacted.
So you couldn't get the funds.
Exactly.
When you got a check for four digits that was redacted, did you call and say, what is going on? Did you have an
agent? I could never get any answer. The union didn't know why it was like that. You know, nobody knew. But they just basically, they owed us this money in residuals. Because of the contracts, which you can't get out of the residual contracts.
Right.
But they simply refused to pay it.
I mean, both Tony and I are smiling right now, but that's absurd. I mean, that's just obscene. All those checks could probably get us a nicer studio. I do have a law degree, and I'm a member of the California Bar, but I don't think I'm going to be the best guy to take it on.
We ought to go on as a sort of poor little Spinal Tap, you know, and go on Kickstarter and see if we can get enough money to really slap them.
That was Tony Hendra, who played Sir Ian. I keep saying Sir Ian. I want you to be a Sir. Ian Faith in Spinal Tap, or This Is Spinal Tap.
Great. Thank you. That was fun.
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back. And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Hi, everyone. Juliana Forlano here, and now, your Absurd Minute. The official presidential race has begun. Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, and Rick Santorum are all running for president, prompting millions of Americans to run for the border. California Governor Jerry Brown declared that Ted Cruz is unfit to be president. Meanwhile, Chris Christie remains, well, just plain unfit. In a twisted effort to discredit climate change, Ted Cruz is comparing himself to Galileo, which is valid in the sense that both of them are from the 16th century. On the Democrat side, Hillary Clinton may be running. Many Dems don't like her because she has a conservative side, while Republicans don't like her because she has a vagina. Mitch McConnell sent a letter to 50 governors telling them to ignore federal law regarding the EPA. That makes two letters McConnell sent out undermining the president. Funny, I have two letters for Mitch McConnell, too. They're F and U. Dick Cheney recently did an interview with Playboy, which fits the theme of the magazine since Playboy makes its money showcasing asses. Dan Donovan and Vincent Gentile, the two men running for congressman and graft poster child Michael Grimm's seat, had a Q&A in Staten Island on Monday night. It was a debate between who would defend Staten Island's honor and who would become its congressman. A letter that was sent to the White House tested positive for cyanide. It was correctly addressed to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, so the Secret Service can already confirm that it wasn't sent by Sarah Palin.
1400 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Police found a meth lab inside the basement of a Walmart. Say what you want, but I'm happy to hear that Walmart is finally selling products that are made in America. That was the Absurd Minute. I'm Juliana Forlano. Find our podcast at julianaforlano.com.
Tony, we got to come up with a promo. Our listeners don't know enough about all the great stuff the Final Edition does. Even when we tell them, it's all this like blah, 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 dot, 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 www, URL crap. No one gets what that is on radio. They just tune it out.
Well, I have the perfect way to hold their attention while we give them the goods. When I was at the National Lampoon in the 70s, our most famous cover had a cute mutt with a 38 Magnum to its head and the legend, buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog.
Yeah, I remember that, but how does that help us? It was a visual image for a magazine.
Meet Freckles.
Freckles? Oh, there. Good boy.
Yay!
What's the matter then?
Also, meet my 38 Magnum.
Jesus Christ, you have a gun? Don't wave that thing around here. Is that thing loaded?
Sure is. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. If you don't stay tuned to this promo while Jeff gives you all the necessary info about our fabulous website and our fabulous YouTube channel and other fabulous stuff we do, I will shoot this dog.
Yay! Jesus, man, take the gun out of that defenseless animal's ear.
Uh-uh. Give him a good, Chef.
Oh, my God, poor Frickles. Okay, fine. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour, you want more of what we do, go to thefinaledition.com. Our radio airs on this network on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at 8, as well as Wednesday at midnight. We've also got an album, we've got a Twitter feed, we've got a great YouTube channel, Facebook, everything you can want at thefinaledition.com.
Now, tell them to tap all that into their iPhones or leave themselves an audio memo.
No, I won't. I told them enough, Tony. I'm calling the SPCA.
Tell them, or the dog gets it. I'm cocking the gun right now.
Okay, listeners, please, write this down. Thefinaledition.com. Thefinaledition.com. Go there for everything you want from the Final Edition, or this crazy old British coot is going to plug old Freckles.
Okay, that wasn't so hard, was it? Come here, Freckles, you dumb old chum. Hey, get down! Get down! Get away from me! Get, you crazy cunt!
Good job, Freckles!
Get him!
Sick him! Oh, yeah, this is Jeff Kreisler for the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. 8 p.m. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Midnight on Wednesday.
No, Freckles, put that thing down! You don't have opposable thumbs! No!
Tired of going through all the trouble of making a nice hot pot of tea, only to have it turn cold in just a matter of minutes? Well, now you can make delicious tea and enjoy it hot for hours with Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies.
Hi, I'm Ed, CEO of Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies. And when I say Joe, I of course mean me, you know, because otherwise, you know, it's a legal thing. There's only a finite amount of unclaimed bodies down at the morgue, and they're, you know, kind of hard to get a hold of sometimes. So, you know,
what Joe's saying is this. There's nothing satisfying about a cold cup of tea.
And that's where Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies come in. You see, only Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies are harvested from legally obtained medical school cadavers. I mean lonely hobos found sleeping by the L.A. River. No, I mean legally obtained from medical schools or... Oh, God.
Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies, made from real human skin. Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies, made from real human skin. Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies, made from real human skin. Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies, made from real human skin.
Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies keep your kettles warm and safe from nicks and scratches.
I use one of Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies to protect the precious tea kettle my mother gave me just days before she passed away.
On December 20th, 5:30 a.m.
How'd you know that?
how do any of us know anything, really? You know, she was a lovely lady, really.
What do you mean by that?
Stop looking at me. You think I'd keep doing this if there weren't a market for it?
And if you like Joe's Human Skin Tea Cozies, you'll love Joe's Real Human Bone Home Loans, made with real human bones.
And now you may ask, human bones? What's that got to do with home loans? I just don't have the answers to these questions anymore, you know. Why won't anyone stop me?
Joe's Real Human Bone Home Loans, made with real human bones.
Stop on by. Just turn left at the sign that looks like a hollowed-out skull. Okay, that is a skull.
All parts assembled in the USA.
Joe's Real Human Bone Home Loans, made with real human bones.
This is the story of an old Cherokee man who is teaching his grandson about life.
Grandson,
he said.
A fight is going on inside me.
Tell me, Grandpa. For you are wise and old. What kind of fight is it?
The boy asked.
It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves,
said the old Cherokee man.
One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego.
He continued.
The other is good. He is joy. Peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, grandson, and inside every other person, too.
The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather,
which wolf will win?
The old Cherokee simply replied,
the one you feed.
And the grandson said,
I don't get it.
To which the old Cherokee responded,
Huh?
I do not get it, wise old grandfather.
Okay, it's very simple. A fight is going on inside me.
Oh, me too. I'm always that way after I eat cabbage.
No, that's a different kind of fight.
This isn't about cabbage?
What did I just tell you? No, it's not about cabbage. It's not food related, okay? This is about inner conflict. Pay attention. Oh, for God's sake, what's the problem?
I am hungry.
You just ate.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm feeling hungry.
Look, we all have a battle going on inside us, grandson. Between good and evil. Don't you understand this now?
Yes, of course I do. I'm not an idiot, you know. Never eaten cabbage again, I can tell you that for sure. Yes, sir.
How old are you?
22. Why?
Well, you're an asshole. What do you think about that?
I never liked you.
Look, I try to teach you a lesson about life, and all you can do is complain about cabbage. Why don't you just get the fuck out of here?
You're right, Grandpa. There is iron in your words.
Oh, God. What? God, I should have sold you to that nice Mexican family when I had the chance. Remember that, you little twerp?
Didn't have the guts then, don't have the guts now.
Ow! What are you... Stop beating me with my walking stick! I'll kill you!
Give me your money, old man!
So you can buy more cabbage? Never!
It was at this moment the grandson's mother entered upon the scene.
What's going on in here? Let go of my son, you monster!
Let go of your... I never touched your little weasel.
Hey, Grandpa, my inner conflict's about to become external.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. Oh, that's disgusting. You animal.
Leave my baby alone.
I'll kill him. Come here, you.
No, stop it. My baby. Don't. Oh, no. My baby. Oh, no. Stop it.
There. What's done is done. You want your son now? Take him. Go ahead. I did what had to be done. I have no regrets,
the old man said, and the mother of the grandson took the body of her boy from the old man's hogan, or teepee, or whatever. And as she did this, she uttered this parting remark.
I'm calling the cops. I'll see you hang for this.
To which the old Cherokee quipped,
Yeah, stand in line, bitch. Go fuck yourself.
And thus ends the story of the old Cherokee who is teaching his grandson about life.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. The voices of the Final Edition are performed by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Dan Vitale, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lenk, John Marshall, Abby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, Rob Miller, Kayla Merrill, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. Credit to our writers at the Final Edition Radio Hour, Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, John Marshall, Barry Lenk, Leslie Shapira, Kate Knowles, Jeremy Rayburn, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition is produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler, West Coast production by Barry Lenk. Audio edited and engineered by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.